be an entrepreneur in the job that you're in every time. And what I mean by that is, can you expand your job on your terms? Are the people around you the kind of people who are willing to allow you to do that? If they're not, maybe it's not the job for you if you truly want to grow your career.
Are you looking to increase sales, grow your brand, and share your leadership message? Then check out our business podcast program. Each week, more people listen to podcasts than have Netflix accounts, and one-third of the U.S. population listens to podcasts regularly. So your customers and team are already listening to podcasts. It should be yours. Discover our five-step profitable podcast framework and what results you can expect for your company by setting up a 20-minute call with my team at benleads.com/schedule. That's benleads.com/schedule.
Welcome back to Lead the Team with number one best-selling author and in-demand corporate trainer, Ben Fanning. On this podcast, the world's most innovative senior leaders share their top success strategies to motivate your direct reports, cultivate your top leaders, and accelerate your career. Let's get started. Here's Ben.
Hey there, Lead the Team. Welcome back. Today, I've got a fun one coming your way with Scott Kinka, who is the Chief Strategy Officer over at Bridgepoint Technologies and also a founding member and former CTO of a cloud services innovator called Evolve IP, which he actually exited to private equity back in 2017. He's also host of the podcast, The Bridge with Scott Kinka, which focuses on personal stories and product development with executives from some of the world's largest tech companies, including Zoom, AT&T, and Comcast Business. Y'all know I'd like to have an executive on who knows a bit about podcasting. Scott, welcome to Lead the Team.
I am thrilled to be here with you this morning. Thanks so much.
So before we got going here, y'all, I was like, man, Scott, tell me about that marvelous microphone. And he described it as the Michael Jackson Thriller mic. What do you mean
it
by
is.
That?
It is. So, yeah, I mean, this is a, you know, without getting too geeky, it's a Shure SM7B. It's become super popular with podcasters, known in the podcast world as the Joe Rogan mic. I think they all use these. But the microphone itself has been around for 30 to 40 years, something, and just has sort of changed in format a little bit. And yes, this microphone with actually the windscreen off and a bunch of things was used by Michael Jackson in recording the Thriller album, which is super cool.
Historic. Was it used in We Are the World? Did he use it in We Are the World?
I don't think so. They did that in a big old group.
Okay. Yeah. Hard to pass a mic around.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And it's a really close proximity mic. So I don't think they were doing that. They were doing that in the We Are the World group.
Well, you mentioned nerding out, geeking out on microphones, and you said, you know what? I got my start in music.
I did.
You going to give me a little insight on that?
You know, it's, I mean, I was, you know, I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia. I was studying marketing and communications locally at LaSalle University, and kind of the best way to figure out how to make money to pay for school is really what it boiled down to. So what ended up starting as a weekend hack around job became 6 to 7 night a week up and down the East Coast, you know, full-time job for me that went through all of college, my first job, all the way through going back to grad school. You know, it started as a, let's make a couple bucks on the weekend to pay for school. It ended up being a decade of my life while I was working on everything else.
In a band?
6 nights a week sometimes, 6, 7 nights a week.
What was your band?
A band was called Split Decision. We were headquartered basically out of the Jersey Shore in Philly, but played all over the place. And honestly, the band is, as happens in the Philadelphia and Jersey Shore market, the band is still around today. A couple iterations, you know, with past when we were there with a whole different set of members. But, you know, these names live on, right?
So did you ever run into Bruce?
No, but I will tell you that I had the playing on stage with Clarence Clemons of the E Street Band. We opened for him in Wildwood, New Jersey. I think it was probably the summer of like 91 or 92. And he truly was bigger than you thought he was. He was actually that giant. It was fun. Good time.
Y'all, Clarence, well, so the people that don't know Clarence, E Street Band, will you just give them a little snippet? They probably heard of Bruce Springsteen, but
I'm sure. Well, you've heard of Bruce Springsteen's epic songs. You've heard the echoing, you know, billowing saxophone solos that were in them. And Clarence was a member of the E Street Band. Bruce affectionately referred to as the big man, and he legitimately was. He was the saxophone player in the E Street Band. They were together their entire careers. And if you ever see a Bruce image, the one people think about is that cover of the Born to Run album where Bruce is leaning up against this giant mountain of a man. It's a black and white photo. That is who Clarence Clemons is.
Oh, I get a chill thinking about it. We saw Bruce Labor Day weekend of 2023. He did that string of shows at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah.
And so Clarence, rest in peace, passed away. But is it his nephew or his son?
That's, I believe it's his nephew.
His nephew. His nephew.
Who's great.
Is now play sax.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think that band, you know, and I mean, we're probably both dating ourselves here, but, you know, pound for pound, you know, they grew up playing music, frankly, the same way that I did. Not trying to make a comparison there, but just hitting the Jersey Shore bars and playing every night, you know. So, yes, he became a big pop star, a big radio star. But when you see them live, they're still a Jersey Shore band. They go hard for 3.5 hours. I think pound for pound, they're probably the best live band that's still playing.
Oh, unstoppable, man. Yeah, we were at my daughter, 13 year, or she was 12 years old, and it just blew her mind. See these guys. Yeah, it's incredible.
My oldest daughter, who lives in Manhattan, she's in her mid 20s. She went to the Zach Bryan concert at MSG, and Bruce came out, first time she's ever seen him live. And she was like, you're seeing Zach Bryan. He's probably the biggest star in the world for kids that age now. And he comes out and she's like, the man just exudes rock star. Like, it was like a living legend walked out on stage. It's like, it's pretty special. Really cool.
I saw a clip from that. And so I've seen Zach Bryan open up for Nathaniel Ratliff. And it was the only show I'd ever been to where someone proposed to their fiance during the opener. And
I love it.
And unfortunately for Nathaniel Ratliff, I think half the crowd left after Zach Bryan opened. And I thought, wow, this is going to be interesting. And since then, you know, he's been.
Yeah, that kid's on a rocket ship. Yeah. He's doing an unbelievable job.
And I actually listened to an interview that he did on Rogan. He talked about all the flack he's gotten because he pretty much went from playing on YouTube to playing stadiums and had his Jersey Shore working his way out through the bars. He went right to the top.
He went right at it.
So,
You could see it too. My daughter was saying, he's like, when Bruce came out, he was like, he started playing a song that they wrote together and he made a mistake and stopped. And he was like, I just have to be honest with you. Here I am in MSG. I'm making a mistake because, like, my lifetime hero is standing right here and I'm extremely nervous. Like, he's still
a
rookie, you know, still wet behind the ears playing in stadiums.
Yeah.
I get
you. And he was on Bruce's home court, basically.
Home turf. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Bruce is very comfortable. I mean, Bruce is comfortable everywhere. But, let's bring it back to you. I got to ask you, what did you learn about leadership? Working bars, playing bars in Jersey, up and down the East Coast.
You know, it wasn't on our question list because we didn't even get into this in the pre-show, but I'll tell you what I learned, and I think it's really important to it, is humility. My first manager in music was an expert at knowing how to work the room before the room got full. And, he trained us to basically walk in, and you're a musician and it doesn't matter how big you are and what's going on. But, you know, there's the quiet moment where you're getting set up and you're tuning and you're doing the things that are there. Well, you know, the bartenders and the waitresses, they're getting their stations ready. You know, they're cleaning glasses. They're making sure the entire night has to be an experience for the people that are in there. And his advice at that moment was, you know, you've got a crew, they're doing their stuff. You do your work. And then you go out and you introduce yourself to every single person working in that room. You're never too big to introduce yourself to every person working in that room. Write their names down, mention them from on stage. They are trying to earn a living too, but it also enhances the experience, right? When the band is interacting with the people in the room. And then the same goes, I think, for the first couple people that are there. You know, you're jamming Jersey Shore bars, you know, the first set isn't always the most fun set, right? And it's not always crowded. So, you know, when those first people meander in before you get started, don't walk on, don't hide in the back and walk on stage like a rock star. Get to know them, ask them what they like. And in that first set, when maybe it's not as full, play to them and let them know that it's interesting. So I think humility is really the point. And I think you can pull that forward into leading the team, right? I mean, my management style is that, you know, nobody in the org that sits below me should be somebody who I should know on a first name basis, who shouldn't be somebody that, should feel comfortable talking to me. And it's got to start with, how are you? What's going on with the family? Tell me how you're doing before you jump into the work. And I mean, that's, you know, pretty interesting Jersey Shore bar band life lesson that I think translates to management of any size organization.
Wow. It does. I can definitely see it translating, and I can see people missing it, especially as you grow. If you're doing a bunch of, like, the translation is you're doing a bunch of gigs, it starts to run together, everything. Or if you're working, you've been with the same team for a while and it seems like you're just going through the motions, and you forget to talk to the administrative assistant, or you forget to acknowledge your team's birthday or anniversary at the company. I've got a, you know, I worked at Honeywell for 10 years, years and years ago, and one of my bosses still emails me over a decade later and says, hey, on this day back, you know, isn't it been like 15, 16 years? You started at Honeywell. And he's still at Honeywell.
Not that good, but that's an amazing manager.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. All right. Well, I've already had too much fun that I probably already should have had in this interview.
Good,
so thank you for that. But let's tell us about your best job interview.
I think it's a great lesson. You know, my wife and I laugh about this. I've only ever applied for one job, which was my first job out of college. And every other job just sort of came from being patient and listening and networking and hearing what people are saying, going, hey, that's a good idea, you know. And I think the best story I ever had, I'm in my, it's the mid-90s. I'm still a puppy, but, you know, I started designing web pages in my first job at the ad agency that I worked in, which was not my job, right? I'm like, hey, nobody knows how to do this. And it's the, you know, it's at that point, it's probably 96, you know, 95, 96. I learned those skills. I ended up working for a consulting company and building a development team for them to outsource. So I was selling to a regional telecom company. Most people didn't know where to go to get your web pages done. Do you call your ISP or your marketing company? So they had an ISP.
You're a young person out of college. You must know how to design a web page.
Exactly, right? So I'm in there selling them, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I knew what I was talking about web. I had no idea what I was doing selling them. And I admitted it, and I'm in the room. And at that moment, you know, the cell phone rang of the guy who was like leading the initiative to find an outsource provider. You know, here he answers the phone, right? Pull the antenna out. Yeah, let me go get this, right? His StarTAC, to date yourself there, walked out of the room to get this phone. And the next guy at the table leaned over and he goes, all right, let's just get this on. I'm going to get him out of the way and hire you. Literally at the table, right in the middle of the interview. And you know, it's about sort of just embracing the opportunity. And I was like, okay, this wasn't what I was expecting to do, but my ears are open. Let's chat about it. I ended up going to work there. And not only did I end up going to work there, but two of the guys in that room at that time ended up becoming founding partners alongside of me in my next job. And I still work with today in my current one in various ways, right? So, you know, I think the lesson in all of that, and I think in every one of these job journeys is to just listen, be patient and let it come to you. Like, and just be somebody who says yes, even if it's yes, but to explore the opportunities that are out there, because if you're listening for them, they do present themselves.
Wow. Yeah. You never know when those moments are going to emerge and just,
yeah. I mean, you know, that moment set the next 20 some odd years of my career up through the next three companies.
Yeah. So for you, it was listening. It was being aware. It sounds like just like you say, being open to the possibilities and not going through the motions of this is just another one here.
Exactly.
Let's see where this
100%.
Yeah. Wow. What a cool story. Would you or your CEO be a good fit for this podcast? If you know a uniquely talented leader who has a story to share and a message to deliver, then we'd love to host them on the show. Go to benleads.com/apply to fill out a quick form where you can let us know a little bit about yourself, and my team will take a look to see if we're a good fit. That's benleads.com/apply. You say that, quote, "I've been an entrepreneur in every job that I've been in." What do you mean by that?
You know, I think it's partly that listening conversation we just had, but I think it's also being open to expand the role that you're in, right? I think, you know, I coach a lot of younger workers, let's say, and I think this is a little bit of a challenge that we have right now in kind of the last two generations in the workforce, that very much like, I have a job and my job's the job that I have and I'm going to go do it well, and then I'll wait for my review to figure out if I can move to whatever the name of my role is, one up to whatever my name of the role is to next year, right? And I don't think that's the way you should approach your career. If you were a career oriented person, and listen, I'm somebody who, there are many nights when I'm on my 14th hour of work that day where I would love to be the kind of person who's not career driven. You know, I'd love to pack it in at 5. I'm not wired that way. And I generally feel like success doesn't come to you that way. And what I say is, be an entrepreneur in the job that you're in every time. And what I mean by that is, look for the opportunities to expand the role that you are in. You know, I'll give you some examples. Right out of college, I ended up working at an ad agency, biggest ad agency at the time in Philadelphia, and went right from college straight in there. And, you know, that was grunt work for crap money. Right. But we were just chopping the wood. But I mentioned earlier about web pages. I'm like, you know what? Nobody knows how to do this. Let me go and do that. Right. I'm in a group that does largely yellow page advertising and some basic newspaper. And I'm like, what about this? And they're like, hey, next thing you know, I'm 25 and running a new initiative and product line for the business because I asked and I started doing things and I embraced the opportunity. Next job, same thing. You know, I went. This was the company that we were just talking about. I'm in there selling services to them. And here I was, a 20-something division director, because nobody knew how to make that kind of stuff. So go, right? The next job truly was an entrepreneurial opportunity. But I think that's really the key to that statement, which is, can you expand your job on your terms? And, you know, are the people around you the kind of people who are willing to allow you to do that? If they're not, maybe it's not the job for you if you truly want to grow your career. But look for ways to expand beyond your job. And, you know, if you're making hay and that's not seen by your boss, it's probably not the boss you should be working for.
Incredible and sage career advice. Expanding your job on your own terms, doing the kind of work you like. So there's like just like an intersection, confluence of, this is what the company deems as valuable. This is what I like to do. Let's have a conversation around that intersection. If it can exist, if it does exist, I don't think most people are thinking like that. I certainly didn't for a long time. I hope the people
listen. Because I think we have this, like, I think there's this inherent fear of transparency in the workplace. You know what I mean? Like,
what will happen if we have this conversation?
Yeah. Are they going to go, you know, they're going to take my current job away from it? Look, I'm not advocating you not do your day job, right? What I am advocating is, you look at your day job and you say, what else, you know, how can I make my day job better? How can I chop more widgets? How can I add an adjunct capability to it? Whatever those are. Be an entrepreneur in your job every time.
So let's build upon that. When an employee has a big idea, maybe you've had that conversation, you're like, wow, there may be an intersection of your strength, which you enjoy, and what's valuable here. When they have a big idea, what's your advice on how they should communicate it to the C-suite?
I think the biggest challenge when, you know, either early, you know, sort of frontline folks are talking to middle management is talking to executives are talking to board, is there's always a headlining problem. You know, you almost have to start with the answer and then back your way into the detail. And I think, you know, if you're the person in the meat, you're chopping the wood, right? Like, you're doing the grinding. So it's all about the grinding. Sometimes the grinding doesn't matter, right? I have an idea that. Get to the idea first, and the result of the idea for the business, you know, I think if I work on the following thing, I can produce X for the business. Mm-hmm. And to do that, detail, they'll cut you off at some point. But I think headlining is a really, really important skill that anybody can get to as you go through that. I think that's one. Let me give you one other.
So headline problem is a subject line problem all in the email. Like
100%.
Like you're setting the meeting up, you're talking to them. And I've never heard it put that way, but I can see that. Like, what's the, like, imagine you, your problem or your idea is the front page of a newspaper and you're going to go set it on the CEO's desk. What is that headline going to be? And that'll be your email. That'll be the first words. Is that
it's the first word you say as you go through there? And I think you could take that layer down. Then, like, if you, because often then let's say they go, you know what? That is a great idea. Why don't you give me a plan on that? And that this, you're like, I've never done a plan. Okay, let me think about this. And you stare at Word and it's empty. It's a big old white screen, you know? And I tell people who are doing that for the first time, I insist on business plans for everybody who works for me every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a red pen guy, right? But I want to see the thinking. Like, I want, you know, it's like math, like, show me your work, because I need to know that that's there. And when you stare at a white screen, you're like, wow, I just don't even know what to say next. And I always say to them, all right, well, we started with the headline. Why don't you write your table of contents next? Just what's the order of the things that you would come to? Then you can backfill, right? But like, to support the headline, what's the table of contents? Write the table of contents. All right, let's work on that first. You get the table of contents out, and then you start sort of chopping through the buckets, right? At the end of all of that history, all the backup, why it's a problem, what our actual numbers are, what I'm trying to pursue, all this. If the result is not evident, like self-evident really in the reading of that, then you didn't make your point. You never got to the headline. Hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. I also had let me say one other way of saying that.
Yeah.
It was great advice I got in college. You know, I studied, here I am a tech guy, and I've always been a tinkerer and a bit of a nerd my entire life in that regard. I went to school for marketing and communications, and I had a writing professor who was a movie critic also, right, on the local television station. So if there was a punctuation mark on the cover of your he would just give you an F and hand it back to you. Like, cause he's like, I'm going to stop reading if there's an error in the headline. Why would I even go to the rest? Right. Mm-hmm. But his general construct for writing or telling a story was really simple. Tell me what you're going to tell me, and then remind me of what you told me. It's no more complicated than that at the end of the day. And I always think that's great advice for headlining.
Yeah. So good. And it really helps people think about where they need to emphasize their thought and their communication skills.
Yeah.
Focus 100%. On that. You can't even, you have to really earn the right to go into the detail by having that first part compelling.
Tight. I love the way you express it, earn the right to get into the detail. You know, when you're so excited about that idea, that's where you start. Whoops. You know what I mean?
I'd love to tell you that statistic if I could just get there. What are three success strategies that all employees need to understand?
Three success stories. I mean, I think we might have hit one of them, you know, already.
Success strategies. I said stories. You don't have to go through three stories.
Three success strategies. Yeah, I think one is the headlining. Like, that's a good point. You know,
that's a big check.
A good idea that you're trying or not. Just that's an essential skill, even for communicating in your meeting or the project or your own, whatever. I think an additional one would be, you know, practice emotional intelligence. And I use that as a catch-all because there's so many kind of subcomponents to that. I keep the books that are most important to me, like this is the emotional intelligence quick book. I don't know if you've ever been through that, but it's basically a construct for like, where am I at in this place? Self-awareness, you know, what's the awareness of the situation I'm in? Can I be empathetic and understand the other party? And then what if I put us all together? You know, those are the things to think about as you go through that. Sounds like a confusing construct, but the reality of it is, where am I? Where's the other person? Practice empathy. Right. So, and if you apply that to any interaction, you know, sometimes, listen, you could have constructed the best headline in the world. But if you are not in the place, nervous, scared, whatever, or the other party is not in the place, annoyed, not wanting to have this conversation, had a fight with their spouse that morning, then the result's not going to be good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and if you're self-aware or empathetic enough to look at the situation that way, then if it doesn't go well, don't get frustrated, right? Practice patience and emotional intelligence as you go through that and wait for the right time for yourself or the right time to get the other person. And I think the third one we kind of already got to, which is really around that be open. Like if you see that opportunity present itself, ask the question. Like, don't be afraid. You know what I mean? Part of that is that, like, you know, be somebody who's uncomfortably transparent in many ways, you know, and not in a bit, but with your boss, right? Like, hey, I'm feeling this right now. I think this is an opportunity. Is that something you'd give me the latitude to work on? Not a hard question, but it is in some ways uncomfortably transparent.
Yeah, there seems to be a
wall. I promise you your boss would prefer that.
Yeah, I think a lot of employees, and I remember this for years, there just seemed to be a wall there. Like, we don't talk about these things. I'm just going to talk about getting my work done and focus all on that all the time. And I really missed a lot of opportunities to talk to them about my career aspirations, what I was liking about work, you know, how I was, you know, dealing with things internally. And if you're able to share that in probably a sort of a concise way, I think you can get a lot of mileage out of it and the boss will appreciate it.
Well, and if you're the boss, I think the skill you have to bring to that in reverse is, you know, Ben, if you were like, hey, this is the part of the job I'm really enjoying, you know, I think it's incumbent on you as the leader to the following question is, all right, well, how do we figure out how to do more of that then in the context of the job that you're doing every day?
So what's a tool or gadget that's contributed to your success other than the Michael Jackson Thriller mic? But if you want
to, best question I've ever had, the second part, I love that. You know, I incessantly journal. Like if I don't go into a meeting with my iPad, I go into a meeting with the current tattered version of whatever I'm carrying. I don't, you know, and I've modernized. People are like, oh, here's this old crusty guy talking about writing stuff down. I've modernized the way I note take, you know, I use the note taking tools and all the stuff when we're in the meeting. Right. But where I write down my action items, where I plan my day, where I kind of scratch down ideas that are not necessarily notes because I don't know what I'm going to do with them yet. That's part of it. The second one is I've kept every single one. They're back here on the shelf behind me. I can go back and grab the one from 92 to the beginning of 93, you know what I mean? Probably not that far back, call it 2000 to 2000. I can grab that one and go back and see. I think the way I use them has morphed over time. My wife would tell me that I have a touch of ADD, that's probably part of it too, right? But just keeping yourself organized and being able to go back and look and say, you know what, 6 pages ago, boom, 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 you know, did I make progress from 30 days ago, from 45 days ago, you know, or did I leave ideas hanging? You know, did I leave things I felt like were priorities hanging? So I think that's a big tool.
Do you have a certain time of day that you like to journal or?
It's open. It's literally, I'm right-handed. So my mouse is to the right and the journal's to the left, open with my keyboard in between at all moments.
Do you write a to-do list?
Also say, have a good pen. Be somebody who enjoys a good pen, because if you don't, you won't write. You know, if it's a Bic, you're not going to spend the time.
Make it convenient. It sounds like, are you writing your to-do list in there or just?
Yes.
Everything.
Could be my to-do list, could be the thing that I didn't say to somebody, you know, could be even just like interspersing the personal items. Like I gotta go do this. I promised my wife I would do that. I gotta do this thing for the kids. Whatever that is, I just date the top of the page and it just becomes, sometimes it's just a complete jumble, but the words are on the paper. And for me, at least there's a satisfaction in many ways of many of the pages are just full pages of crossed out things because I got to them. But it does help we are in a multi-context, you know, multimodal, multi-threading world the way we're operating right now. If I were not somebody who could tell somebody not now at this point in my career, you know what I mean? I can imagine it would be hard. You're frontline, you're just out of college, you're in your second job, you're working, you know, the contextual, non-contextual demands that come in from you without expectation of, you know, when somebody wants an answer. That's the hardest. I mean, we respond to chats, email, text messages, phone calls, right? Like, in what order do you take them? Like, and what's the other person expecting back from you? Is your boss going to get pissed if you don't immediately respond to an email? I don't treat email that way. Mm. You know what I mean? For me, email's a thing. It's got mail in the title. I will get to it at the end of the day. You know, but if you need me right now, do some, you know, get to me some other way. But I don't think those ground rules are established very often between kind of frontline employees and leadership. Like if I get to you this way, this is the way I'm expecting you to respond. Yeah. And in this timely fashion. So it's hard. Yeah. And that's why many times he's just become a jumble, but it at least ensures to me that I'm not going to leave something on the cutting room floor. Those are the things, you know, where good ideas go to die.
I think a couple things on it. One is that having a centralized place to put your thoughts, your to-do list, and also have a parking lot for things. Like if you do get distracted, you can write down, okay, I got to get back to so-and-so. You've got a place to capture it. And this capturing of ideas, I've tried journaling and now I'm back on journal. I kind of go in and out, but I've used Evernote. I've used a lot of other things. And the problem with digital, one thing I like about digital is I always have it with me. Mm-hmm. But there's also this out of sight, out of mind. And I
totally,
and I forget that it's been captured, but when I have it written down, I have a central place to go. And I love the idea of, hey, when you've had it for years and years and years, you can go back and see, you know, what I was thinking back then. Do you have a certain kind of journal that you like to use, or is just
No, they're all over the place. Oftentimes there'll be giveaways at tech events and, you know, the whole nine yards. I mean, this is a Moleskine. These are really good. But I mean, I would say keep it not this, you know, don't be carting around the folio because you won't take it. So that's what I mean. You know, your point about you'll always have your notes with you. I always have this with me. I like one that'll just like I can wrap to the outside so I'm not going to lose anything. I can throw some papers in it. This goes to every meeting. Even if I have to leave, even like, you know, I'm not going to take this in the meeting. I leave it in the car, but I'll open it up while I'm getting the coffee at the convenience store after leaving the meeting and just make sure I'm not missing anything that's topical. Mm. Just a place to go.
Well, Scott, let's just say we covered a lot of ground today. And I feel like with you, there's probably a lot more ground to go. So maybe we'll have to do it again. But for Bruce Springsteen to entrepreneurial life inside and outside of organizations to headline problems to journaling.
I love it. It's fun. It's
a well covered episode.
Good.
Thanks for coming on today, my friend.
Fantastic. Absolutely.
Want to boost your productivity and decision making? Get vital insights from each episode delivered directly to your inbox. A great resource, whether you've listened to the episode or not. Go to benfanning.com/insight.